Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, welcome to the Balance Podcast. Our guest today is rising star Thadia Graham. Thadia is the star of the new Netflix series that has got tongues wagging. Sounds like I'm trying to get on the poster. The Irregulars. Now, The Irregulars is set in Victorian England and on the surface is about a group of street urchins who help Sherlock Holmes solve crimes. Now, you might make the mistake that I made. I went into this thinking it was going to be aimed at, say, 11, 12-year-olds, because the way I've described it, you'd think, yeah, fair enough. It's probably about the age where you get into Sherlock Holmes. No, it skewers significantly higher than that. If you've got an 11 or 12-year-old, please make sure they do not watch The Irregulars, because they won't sleep. Within about 10 minutes, I realised this was a very different show to what I had envisaged. And it's all the better for it. I loved The Irregulars and devoured it in a couple of sittings, which probably doesn't make me a great dad or husband, but on a selfish level, I really enjoyed it. There's lots of jumps, there's lots of scares. The show goes in one direction. You think it's going to go in one direction, it goes in a very different direction. Thadia Graham really pops, and her charisma and steel is there for everyone to see. This episode is such a treat, and Thadia was such a perfect guest. I won't spoil it. Thadia's life story is absolutely extraordinary, and I will leave it to Thadia to explain. I will say no more. Don't Google it. But my goodness, and the way Thadia talks about her life in the most matter-of-fact way is probably what hit me for six. And as I said to Thadia, at one point I sort of had to put my jumper over my face because she'd have seen me rolling a tear. I like Thadia so much, and everything that she talked about was so interesting. So she talks about her life. She talks about trees and the profound nature that trees can have on our lives. And she also talks about a card game which enables you. It's a card game that actors play, but I think it applies to all of us. So I've hyperlinked the card game as well as The Irregulars. Anyway, I guarantee you will absolutely, I mean, I can't, you know, sometimes they'd say, or your money back. The podcast is free. There'll be no refund. But I guarantee you will absolutely love Thadia Graham. What a total mensch. Fantastic. Here she is, the wonderful, the heart swellingly lovely Thadia Graham. Thank you so much. And I will start off with an admission that I'm very happy to make. So I'd read about the show, the Irregulars, and I thought it was going to be, I'll be honest with you, I thought it was going to be this sort of show over here. I'm expecting, look at me defensively folding my arms already. I thought it was going to be, some cheeky scamps helping out Sherlock Holmes. And then within 5 minutes, oh God, no, this is not what I was expecting. Is that going to be quite a, in the best way possible, that's going to be quite a common thing, I guess, because, you know, it's easy to think it's going to be one thing, and this, it really hoodwinks the audience, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be honest with you. I felt exactly the same, because when I did the audition, they obviously don't give you the full script. So I was getting little scenes to audition with that was like my character and her little sister, my character and her love interest. And I thought, this is lovely. This is about, you know, a little straight gang finding their way. Yeah, this is nice. And then I got the full scripts. I thought, what the bloody hell is going on here? And I'm terrible with horror. I don't like scary things. And I was reading the kind of episodes and it just gets darker and darker and darker. And I thought, holy shit, I don't know if I can film this. I don't know if I'll cry on set or be able to get through it. But it's definitely not what you expect. And I think in the greatest way possible, that's the case. And it really took me by surprise. And when I got offered the role and read the full scripts, I thought, Jesus, this is just a gift here. Because I'd been watching Killing Eve and watching Jodie Comer and what Villanelle gives her as an actor. And I thought, God, that'd be amazing. Like, that's the dream role, to get so many parts of a person to play in one character. And then B came up and landed in my lap. And I thought, oh, God, this is great.
Now, when you say landed in your lap, now you're chatting with someone here. I've got 9 pages of self-help, manifesting, call it whatever you like. Or, you know, it's my wife once read one of the pages and I'm not sure our marriage has ever quite recovered. But when you say landing in your lap, was this something that you thought in your mind's eye, I can actually make this happen? In fact, you know, if I believe in this sort of thing, it might come my way.
Yeah, I definitely think, my mommy always says, what's for you won't go by you. And I think it's very true. And I love that. Now, that doesn't mean you don't work hard. You got to work your ass off. But I think by doing that, then things start to fall into place. You can't just expect to be handed to you. That's not what I mean. But I think if it's meant to be, it's meant to be in some cases. And I think I hadn't heard about The Irregulars before. And I had just been cast by Sarah Crowe, our casting director, in another show. And my agent said to me, oh, they're casting this thing called The Irregulars. And I really wanted to get you in the room for it. But Sarah's not called me yet. And I was like, oh, okay. Because I didn't know what it was. And I thought, okay, I don't know why you're getting so invested in this project. And I've never really seen it like that before. My agent's called Rebecca and she's just wonderful and brilliant. And she was really like, I really want you to read for B. And I was like, okay, if it's not meant to happen, it won't happen. And then Sarah eventually rang and said, we'd like to see her. And I went into the room and I kind of, like you said, preparation for me is key. And you do everything that you can up until that moment. So you can walk into the room and just leave it there and then walk out and go, you know what? If it doesn't go my way, it doesn't go my way. But I did everything I could in the room. And you have to kind of just leave it behind. I think, especially in our industry, like you do so many self-tapes, so many auditions, and sometimes it can feel like just screaming into a void and getting nothing back. So you have to really be sure of yourself and know that, okay, well, I did what I could. And so that's what I did. I just left it. I walked out of the room and thought, that was great. That was really cool. But what's meant to be is meant to be. And then they called me back and I went in with my own accent. So I went in sounding like this, looking like this as well. For anyone listening, I look Chinese. I am Chinese. I said I look Chinese, like that's not a real thing. I look it, but I'm not. So yeah, my face doesn't match my accent at all. And I got the sides and it says Victorian London. And I thought, okay, I'm not sure my aunt remembers what I look like here, but it's okay. Let's go for it. And then I went back in the recall with an English accent and my character B has a little sister, Jessie. So I was thinking, oh, they're never going to cast me because they'll have to cast someone who looks like me as my sister. And then I got offered the role and I thought, oh shit, okay, what's going on here? And B is like quite at the forefront of this little gang. I thought, oh God, okay, 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 okay. And then they brought in someone to read for my little sister, an incredible actress from Liverpool called Darcy Shaw. And Darcy's white. And I thought, hang on. Are we really going to do this? Are they really going to go with this storyline? And they did. And it never felt like, oh, we need to explain why these sisters don't look alike. Like we have the same mom and that was just it. That's absolutely not what you asked. I don't know how we got onto this, but I feel like it kind of all just fell into place really in a really lovely way. And I think had I put so much pressure on myself to do it right, I would have gotten in the way of myself I wanted it. I really wanted it. But I think, like I said, preparation is key, and you have to be able to walk out and go, it's in your hands now. Because there's so many factors that we just can't control.
I mean, also, I mean, this is, if I may live vicariously through you, I mean, this is beyond dreamland, isn't it? You are. I mean, I'm telling you this like you don't know it, but the lead role, it's not just another TV series. This is a big budget. I mean, it's all there on the screen, isn't it? A big budget Netflix series. I mean, this is wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you know what? When you do it, when you're on the ground actually making it, you kind of forget that, because you're just in it, and you have to day to day, you work going, okay, shit, we got this big scene, got prep for that. And it's just, you go into work mode and you tick the boxes and you go through the motions, and it's incredible. And you look around, sometimes I look around at sets and go, holy shit, surely they've made a mistake here with me. Someone's gonna be like, right, okay, thank you so much for doing the little test for us. We'll get the actual actor in now. And we shoot in blocks. So we had 8 episodes, and we shot across 4 different blocks, 2 episodes per block. And we have read throughs for each block because the directors change and things like that. And every read through, so we were at, I think we were reading maybe episode 5, and we've shot 4 of them at this point. And at the read through, I was going, okay, no, don't fuck it up, because they'll recast you. They'll recast you. This is the point where they realize that you can't do this, and the imposter syndrome kicks in. So I definitely have moments of, God, this is so surreal. And even more so when you come out the other side and you look back and you start to get to talk about it, because you hide it away for so long. And then you get to do things like this where people are going, oh, I saw this and this was incredible. And you realize, yeah, it kind of was. And it's very surreal to look at it as a whole piece. And especially like it's coming out this Friday, and the kind of talk about it and the buzz around it has really ramped up. And it's a little bit, not overwhelming, just kind of a lot at once. And you think, oh God, people are talking about our show. It's not just us anymore. It's like, I suppose it's like having a kid. Like, I reckon I could go on stage and burp, and my mom would be like, that's the best thing she's ever done. This is amazing. She's wonderful. You know, she's God's gift. But everyone else is now going, oh, hey, that burp's quite good, you know? it's a little bit surreal.
I've got 2 young girls. I can relate to that. They could punch me in the face, and I'm like, what a jab that was.
Yeah, never will happen again. That was impeccable.
Yeah. Muhammad Ali himself would have been proud of that. also, that was something I wanted to ask, actually. You shot in Liverpool, is that right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How was that? So had you started shooting, and then did you have to shut down for a bit because of the thing, and then you started?
Yeah.
How was all that?
It was... So we were based in Liverpool, and we were 2 weeks away from wrap.
No.
And then, yeah, we were 2 weeks from wrap, and we got the call and the email saying, oh, okay, we're going to shut down as a precaution, but we'll see you in 2 weeks. So everyone just go home, have a little break, and we'll come back. 6 months later, I was like, did anyone else get the call to go back? Am I just sitting here by myself? Or have you all gone back and shot the rest of the show without me? And so we all went back with new COVID protocols. And I think what really benefited us was that we had spent so much time together before that. And everyone was a little bit apprehensive, and we were one of the first shows to get back up and running.
Amazing.
So nobody really knew what to expect. And I was really nervous. And I was more so nervous about getting it and bringing it back to my parents. And I was really, really worried about that. And I thought, oh God, I don't know if we should be, it felt a bit weird to be shooting something when there was a global pandemic, and you feel kind of selfish and like, we're not doing anything that important. Do you know what I mean? And so there was a lot of kind of worry there. But when we got to set, I went in a couple of days before we started shooting the show, and just walked around base, and I wasn't needed really. But I saw everyone just setting up, and I thought, oh, hang on. It's exactly the same, just a little bit different. We have masks on, we're distancing, but all these people are the same. And I know how that works. And it was really nice to talk to people and go, oh, are you scared too? Oh, you're scared. Oh my God, but you're a grown up. Okay, that's fine. and everyone was kind of in it together. And I think that camaraderie and that kind of family thing really helped us, because it was a bit of a scary time. And it's, I suppose it's the fear of the unknown, though, is the worst bit, because you sit there and you wonder and you wonder and you worry and turn it all over in your mind by yourself. But when you actually get there, it's the same thing that you left, and it's just a different kind of way of working.
I mean, I sound like I'm your publicist here, but it is important, because if you think of all the people who are getting employed, I mean, that's, you know, camera people, runners.
Yeah, very true.
And that, you know, that you can't emphasize. So I do a lot of TV warm up when we're not in lockdown. I've been doing that for a lot of years. And so I did a show in between lockdowns, and it is human to have those sorts of feelings. And then someone pointed out to me, and they were talking through about the impact it has on all the people who get hired. But then also with the irregulars, if you think people all around the world, we're all desperate for things to watch. And I mean, in that regard, I mean, that's a huge box that's being ticked, isn't it?
True, very true. I think it provides a kind of sense of escapism, and people, especially during lockdown, we're looking at everything going, oh, give me things to watch, listen to, read, whatever. And I suppose we are adding to that. But I think it's that classic self-deprecation, isn't it? It's like, what am I doing that's so important? Why do I get, you feel guilty almost that you get to go back to your job when so many people are sitting there struggling and not knowing what happens next. And I felt very fortunate to have those 2 weeks to go back to through that first lockdown, especially because nobody knew what the hell was going on. And our industry just kind of was up in the air. It was a very terrifying time. And yeah, felt very, very lucky.
No, good for you. Also, some of our listeners may not know. I mean, I know a lot of people have read Sherlock Holmes, but could you just say a little bit about the irregulars and who they are, because this is something that is frequently alluded to in the Conan Doyle books, isn't it?
Mm. So our show is called The Irregulars, and it's based on the Baker Street Irregulars, which is in the original text, but there's only about four or five lines mentioned, and they're a street gang that kind of assist him on his investigations. And the reason that Watson comes to us in the show is that we can access parts of London that he can't, because he's kind of very posh and looks very nice and we look rough, essentially. And he says, what does he say to us? He says, he's a reputable man.
Yeah, that's right.
And we can access parts of London that are less, less so. And I was like, all right, dickhead. You think a lot of yourself, don't you? And so we start to help him in that respect. And my little sister, Jessie, has not been well. She's been having these really awful nightmares. And we all live, the four of us, our little gang, lives in a cellar underneath a pub called the Duck and Quiver. And Mrs. Hudson is charging us to live in the cellar. She's business savvy that way. And Jessie has been having these nightmares. And our mum died when we were little. And the reason that we were led to believe that she killed herself because of these dreams that she was having. And we have no one else. And I've had to look after Jessie my whole life. And so when she starts having the same kind of dreams that our mum had, I worry that she's going to go the same way. And so we think, right, we need to get her to a doctor. We need to get her medical help, but we have no money. So when Watson comes to us and says, if you do this for me, I'll give you money. And I know that you need that. Then it's a no-brainer in Bee's head, because she would do anything for Jessie, anything to keep her safe, even if it means working with this absolute prick of a man. So that's how we get involved and we start investigating. And as we go on, it just gets a little bit darker and these supernatural elements start coming in. And what I love is that they're essentially kids, they're like 17-year-olds. She does say to Watson at some point, what the hell is going on here? What have you got us involved in? Episode one, this man is controlling birds in London, like all of the birds in London. And at one point, this girl gets her eyes pecked out and gouged out and then is killed. And I'm like, that's not normal. There's something going on here. And as we go through the series, it just gets darker and heavier, and the supernatural elements, this bigger thing that is at play, starts to get a little bit too close to home and starts to intertwine with our actual personal lives. And we go, hang on, this is strange. And so we get even more involved trying to hunt down why that's happening. So it's very different to the Sherlock Holmes that we're used to, but it's very much set in that universe. We do have Sherlock and Watson, but just in a way that we've not seen them before. We're used to Sherlock being this really kind of almost like showman-like person who has this incredible power of deduction. And we do see that through flashbacks. But when we first meet him, he's at the complete opposite of that. And he's really just at the lowest of the low. And he's actually not as quick as he thought he once was. And B is kind of higher than him in terms of like being able to piece together the investigations. And he's desperately trying to clutch back to what he used to be and trying to impress her. And I think he says at one point, oh, you've probably heard of this case that I did. It was really famous. Everyone heard about it. And she says, nope. And it's such like a kick in the gut to him, kick him while he's dying. And I think Watson as well, we're used to almost him being the sidekick, whereas he really takes the front foot here, and he's trying to continue Sherlock's legacy in a way. And he's very elusive and very mysterious and very sinister, which I think is really interesting to see.
And you guys, you became pals, didn't you, making this? Because I know that's not always common, is it? I've heard some actors say, in fact, what's her name? The girl from The Office had said she made a film with John C. Reilly and she was trying to become pals. And he, War Card, that movie, and he very politely and kindly said, yeah, don't do that because it's such a nomadic lifestyle and blah, blah, blah. But it was quite heartwarming to read that you guys had really hit it off.
Yeah, that's all fake. We actually hate each other. I paid them all to say that. I was like, guys, make it look like I have friends, please. No, we were very lucky, very, very lucky. And I don't know whether we have to thank our casting director, Sarah Crowe, for that, or our lead director, Johnny Allen. I don't know who pieced us all together, but I think it was just kind of good timing. And everyone, honestly, like everyone was so nice in that job and just has a really good kind of heart and work ethic, but nobody takes themselves too seriously. And we all know that we are bloody lucky to be doing what we're doing. And it's just, I think it's really infectious when you're around people like that who just love what they do. And I think passion drives so many people in this industry. And I think it kind of filters down from the top. Our creator, Tom Bidwell, has been working on this story for 10 years, I think.
Wow.
It really is his little baby, and you don't want to be the person who screws it up. So when everyone else is working so hard, you think, right, okay, I've got to bring my A game as well. And it just kind of pushes everyone to be better and to keep striving for more, not just to settle. And I love that. And we had such incredible people involved from every single department. It was just honestly a joy to work on. Everyone was just lovely.
It's a wonderfully diverse cast as well. I watch a lot of old films, and you know, a lot of them obviously have not aged well, where, you know, pretty much every single part is played by a white guy. And the, you know, certain movies that the baddie, it turns out that you can't trust the woman. I mean, that happens in like nearly every film noir, you know, so obviously a lot of them tonally don't hold up great. Whereas what's really wonderful about this show is the diversity is a really wonderful thing, isn't it?
Definitely. And I think diversity of all kinds. I mean, we've got B, this female lead of a gang, and it's never questioned. Nobody goes, oh, why is a girl leading your group? And I love that they're just, it's just not the important thing in their world. And we have so many different accents in it as well, and kind of languages. Yep. We have the really upper class coming in from, we see Queen Victoria and her son Leopold, and he's a very, very posh way of speaking. And then we have us, the little street gang, and how we talk to ourselves, and it is quite modern dialect. And then we have people from all different kinds of backgrounds. And I think our lead director, Johnny Allen, he said that he wanted it to reflect the London that he grew up in and the London that he knows. And why should it be different? It's not like we didn't exist back then. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And I think that was, it's just wonderful to be a part of. And I always have this little voice at the back of my head going, okay, were you cast because obviously I look Chinese? So am I just here to tip the diversity box, or am I here because I deserve the part? And that's always at the back of my head. But on this show, it never felt like that was a problem. And the way that they just kind of they took me and they took Darcy, who plays my little sister, who's white and from Liverpool, gave us the same accent. And then Tom so beautifully incorporated this into our storyline about why I am the way, why I look the way I look. But it was never at the forefront. It was just seamlessly weaved in and nobody cares. And I think this is so lovely because they do have bigger problems to worry about, I think, in this show. You know, they're trying not to die because someone's chasing them with birds. Nobody cares what I look like or who I am. And my one of my favorite things about Bea is that she doesn't want anybody to apologize for who they are or where they come from. So Leopold may be this posh person. He's actually a prince, but she doesn't know it at this point.
Yeah.
And he's kind of trying to say to her, like, oh, you know, I don't want you to think that I'm just a dabbler. You know, I'm here to be here. And she says, look, think about it this way. Think about where you're going to sleep tonight. You're probably in some nice, lovely bed. And I'm going to sleep in this dirty, shitty cellar, but that's not your fault. And you are who you are. And you shouldn't apologize for that. And I love that she just accepts people for who they are, no questions asked. And it's all about, you know, what's inside rather than what's around you. And you can be born into privilege, but that's not the only thing about you. That's probably the least interesting thing about you. And I love that she really looks for that depth in people and takes the time to understand why people are the way they are. And she's very much about, you know, you have your past can influence you, but doesn't have to define you. And you have the scope to be whoever you want to be, regardless of your family or where you come from. And I really love that.
I must have a long way to go because I've such a working, such a northern working class chip on my shoulder that I love to tell my posh friends, it is your fault.
It's all ingrained in us at some level, isn't it, though?
No, but that thing with you, you know, your character in particular is such a, you really, and again, I sound like a publicist, but you really pop off, and that character is so well defined. And within a minute, I feel like I've known your character forever. You know what I mean? That's the thing about the show. It hits the ground running, doesn't it? You feel like you've known these irregulars for an age.
Yeah. So I think sometimes you get scripts, you get the scenes for the auditions, and you think, oh my God, this is brilliant. Then you get the full thing and you read it and it kind of, it peaks and it troughs and you go, oh, we're here. Oh, no, we've dipped a little bit. Okay, we've got to work back up to this part. And it feels like a constant flux. But with Tom's script, it just starts at like 100 and it keeps going and it does not stop. And I think that's really, it's just a credit to him. He's just a phenomenal writer. And all of these characters are so well-rounded and so well fleshed out that I actually didn't have to do a lot of work. He made it very easy for me to just tap into B and just, I mean, everyone can relate to having someone that you would do anything for. I don't have siblings, but that bond with Jesse, there are people that you go near them and I will kill you. And I've just realized I've said I will kill someone on a podcast.
Oh, God. It's all about context and intent.
Yeah.
I was with you every step of the, you know.
When you just cut that little sound bite and you put that out there, thank you so much.
Yeah. That's the advert sorted.
Yeah, that's it. So yeah, he's just phenomenal. And I love the kind of relationships that we see. And they're so reflective of life. You know, Bea lost her mum and she never really knew her dad, but she's got her little sister, Jessie. And then she starts to choose her family. And I think so many people have that. So many people have people that aren't blood related, but they are 100% their family. I mean, I'm adopted. I was adopted from China when I was 13 months old. So my mummy and daddy, are technically my adopted parents, but I just call them mommy and daddy. They're not my blood parents, but you know, I am absolutely 100% their daughter. In the things I say and the things I do, I think, oh God, I'm just like my mother, or oh, that's what my daddy would do. So I don't look like them, but you know, I am very much influenced by them. And I think that's true for so many people, not even just in terms of parents, but you know, the people that you choose around you to lift you up and to support you and to who you then give that in return to, I think is just, it's a worldwide thing.
As regular listeners will know, it doesn't take much for me to burst into tears. And I'd read your, not life story. I'm saying that like I've written your biography, but you know what I mean? I mean, look, you know, my, you know, my, you know, I'm turning this into a joint therapy session. I apologise profusely.
Well, that's all right.
My biological father left when I was a toddler, mm. and so I've been raised by a guy that I call dad, but he's my stepdad. But I mean that. But you're absolutely right. You know, you even if you're not a blood relative, you still have that profound closeness. And you and I will know people who have blood relatives as, you know, mum and dad. They're not remotely close. You know, mm. so it's. Life's what you make it, I guess, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think nobody owes you anything, and like nothing is kind of guaranteed. You don't, it sounds really negative, but you don't kind of, how do I word this? I was going to say you don't deserve anything. You do.
I know what you mean.
But you know, nothing is going to be, nobody owes you things to be handed on a platter. You know, you get some people and maybe they're not nice to you and you think, oh, well, why are you being nasty to me? But why should they be nice? They don't know you. And I think, where was I going with this? I think, yeah, so you know, all of these people that you meet and you choose to kind of let in, it's a very vulnerable thing. It's really hard to let people in. But just because somebody is your blood relative doesn't mean that they're going to be the best person in your life, if that makes
absolutely.
Sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's something that so many people can relate to, and nothing is guaranteed.
Do you think that what you know what you'd experienced? Do you think that gave you that mindset? Because one thing that life has taught me is that you know unless daddy owns ITV and then things do land on your lap. But one thing that life taught me is you've got to make it happen yourself. No one's gonna that person's not gonna tap you on the shoulder. For apropos of nothing and go, you want to star in a, you know, you, that I imagine has put you in the best stead in terms of that voracious appetite for work and making things happen.
Yeah, I think so. I think I mean, I always look at my kind of how my life started and it could have gone very, very differently. You know, I was left when I was a couple of days old and I could have died at what, 3-4 days old, but somebody, a complete stranger walked past and thought, oh God, there's a baby. Maybe I should do something about that. And that kindness. And I also think, you know, the choice to leave your child is not an easy one to make. And I don't like, some people are like, oh, well, you're abandoned. I thought, I don't think so. In my heart, I really don't think so. I think that choice is massive. And I think they left me in a place where they knew I was going to be found. And I see that as they were giving me a second chance at life. For whatever reason, I don't know. I'll probably never know why they did it, but I like to look. I think you always have a choice to look at things positively or negatively. And there's enough negativity and shite in the world already. Why not try look at things positively? And so I like to look at it as a second chance at life. And if I don't give 100% to everything, if I don't try and make things the best I can, then I feel like I'm almost shitting on that decision that they had to make to give me that opportunity. And all of these people, they've helped me right up until this point. I mean, I literally wouldn't be here without the kindness of complete strangers and everyone. And you know, that person who found me and took me to the police station, and all those people in the orphanage who cared for me, and then my mommy and daddy who decided to adopt, and that was a long process. And then everyone from there, all my teachers at school and university, and my agent and my publicists, like they've all just taken a chance. Because they don't know. I could screw it up. And I think I probably will at some point, but that's such is life, you know? And even, you know, you reaching out to want to talk to me, I'm like, okay, well, I don't want to let these people down because they've so kindly given me their time. Who am I to say, nah, I'm just going to wing this one? Do you know what I mean?
I do.
I think you just got to, I think I run head first, heart on my sleeve, and then someone goes, oh, hang on, come back. maybe we should be a little bit careful here. But that's definitely kind of, life's too short to waste it half-assing things.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms.
because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm such a, you know, enthusiasm is like my favorite attribute. That's why I was, when you were talking there, I had to cover, put my jumper over my face through.
I do that. That's what I do.
I was absolutely gone there. But I'm such a believer in enthusiasm being the most important attribute a person can have. And yours, I mean,
and
your
curiosity.
What's that? Sorry.
And curiosity, I think.
Absolutely. But you have that in abundance, don't you?
I think I am an innately curious person to the point where I think people are like, all right, shut up. Stop asking questions, please. Can you just take it for what it is? I'm like, yeah, but what about this? But I think that kind of just is part of being an actor as well, just being curious about all these different kind of shoes that you get to step into. And it's such a, I think we are very fortunate to do what we do and to get to really go into the minds of all these different people and see different ways of thinking. And you learn so much from a character. In my second year of uni, we did People, Places and Things by Duncan Macmillan. And that is a play about someone who goes to rehab and is struggling with addiction. And all of the research that goes into doing a play of that kind of weight, our director at the time, Gareth Farr, who was the head of the course, changed my kind of view on acting. And I reckon that project that we did is why I'm doing it today, because he was teaching us all these kind of techniques to get into the character and how to do the research and mine the text. And that was all great. And then he told us this story about how he was in this play once and it went great. And he went out afterwards and someone came up to him and said, that character that you were playing, you were really good. And he went, oh, thank you. And then they said, that is my story. I was that person that you were playing. That was my truth. And he went, holy shit. And he realized that all of these things could feel fictitious to us. It is absolutely somebody else's truth. And you don't know who the hell is watching. So you have to do it as truthfully and as honestly as you can, because you owe it to them. And that story has stuck with me for a long time. And that was when I realized this is what I want to do. I want to tell these stories and connect to people. And, you know, we watch things sometimes, you think, oh my God, that has to be written for me. That is just too perfect. It's articulating everything that I can't, or it's, you know, it's exactly what I need to hear. It's advice. It's that kind of companionship. And I think that is really beautiful. And I think it's really important that we see, just going back to the diversity thing, we see people who look and sound like us and who have shared experiences, because it can make you feel so less alone. You might not be ready to talk about it to your friends and your family, but just to hear a character say it, it's like, oh shit. Yeah. Okay. I take a lot of comfort in that. And I love that part of our job.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it is important that what we see on the screen is a reflection of what we see in life, because it wouldn't be truthful otherwise. Mm-hmm. This is such an irrelevant tangent, but my wife and I, we recently watched the documentary about the Yorkshire Ripper on Netflix, and the subtext of that series is the importance of diversity, because not that any of our listeners would ever question the importance of diversity, but what you had there was that these police chiefs were all white, middle-aged white men, and therefore they all thought the exact same way, mm-hmm. and said the exact same things and came to the same conclusions. And that's why this guy, they couldn't catch him for all these years, because he just had the same people doing the same things. And, you know, we both came away from that. I mean, it was, I don't know if that was the program maker's intent, but that was absolutely all we were talking about afterwards, you know, why this is so important.
Mm. I love that things can just start conversations like that. Like you said, I don't know if that was their intention, but it sparked that conversation. I think these are really important conversations to be having. And yeah, I think that's just kind of wonderful. If it can get people talking about maybe not what you intended, but if it gets people talking at all about something and opens up that communication, then I think that's really, really wonderful and kind of exciting.
Yeah, it's good, and it stays with you.
And I think we can. Oh, sorry.
No, I'm sorry. After you.
I think we can all kind of fall into that trap of, I mean, all we've chosen our friends, we've chosen our family because we like the way that they think and we feel safe with them. And you can kind of fall into a trap of, oh, everything's perfect because you all have similar views to me and I feel really safe and we're going to change the world. And then you walk outside the door and you go, oh, shit, nope. There's 100 people who think so differently to me. And that sometimes can be frustrating and sometimes can be scary, but also really exciting and so refreshing when you meet someone who has a different view to you and you go, hang on, why do you think like that? And I think if we can just embrace that and rather than meet it with, oh, you're wrong, I'm right, I'm going to shut you out and live in my bubble. And instead of doing that, go, okay, let's have a conversation about this. Why do you think that? And try and figure out how all these people are the way they are. It's coming back to B. She says, like, somebody says that one of the monsters, one of the villains in our show is just crazy. And she says, no, it's too easy just to think that people are crazy. There's got to be something more going on here. And she takes the time to figure it out and understand what makes those people tick. And I think if we can do that in life, then, I mean, the world is bloody scary at the minute. There's so many things going on. And if we just actually sat down and had a conversation, I wonder how much that would actually change things.
I could not agree more. And that, I remember that line. That line really pops, and you hit that for a. Sorry for that. To the listener, I just did the worst baseball mime ever. But you.
It was a very small bat.
It was a tiny bat. I mean, the ball would have knocked the bat clean out of my hands. But no, you hit that line for a home run. I wish I'd just said that and not done the mime. I apologise to.
No, anyone. I appreciated that. I like that. Because I didn't know what hitting a baseball looked like until you did it. So thank you so much for that.
It's going to haunt my dreams there. may I ask you, you know, as someone who, any excuse to go on an exploration of the self, I'm all in. But can you explain to us, this card game, We're Not Really Strangers?
Oh, my God, yes. I'm actually wearing their T-shirt right now.
Oh, very cool.
It says, if the conversation is hard, it's probably one worth having. And I love that. It keeps coming back to me so many times, especially recently. Like, there's been things where I'm like, oh, I don't want to be difficult, but I think we should have this conversation. And it's an important one to have. And it's always the fear of the unknown. You think, oh, this is going to go terrible. Or they're going to think I'm being really, like, fussy or difficult. And actually, when you have the conversation, it's not that scary. And you have so many revelations. So We're Not Really Strangers is a card game. And it's all about forming deeper connections with people. And the idea is that you can play it with your partner, you can play it with your family member, or you can play it with a complete stranger. And whether you think you know someone really well or not, it will urge you to kind of ask questions that you don't really usually ask. Or even like the simplest ones can be, tell me your dad's name and one thing about him. And then it can spark this whole conversation. And I think it's a really exciting game to play. And I think the kind of tagline is, oh God, I'm going to butcher it. It's either something like stay curious or come curious or play with an open mind. And there's a card in it. There's three levels. The first kind of ones are all about perception and about like, So I would ask you, you know, do you think I've ever been fired from a job? And it's based off just what you can see. The second level is connection, and it asks a bit deeper questions. And then the third one is reflection. And so we'll talk about, you know, I could ask you, what was the most connected you felt with me during this conversation and why? And it opens up these massive conversations. And there's a card. It's kind of see through, and it just says dig deeper on it. So if I feel like you've held back in an answer, I can play you that card, and it invites people to just look a little deeper in and be, oh no, is it something about being vulnerable? I can't remember the tagline, but it's just brilliant, and it's so exciting to play because you find so much about the other person, but also about yourself. And it kind of just goes on these incredible tangents. And I think everyone should play it. And I think just being curious and being vulnerable and sitting in the discomfort of what can be terrifying conversations or conversations that you don't really want to have, you can learn a lot from. Because the reason that it feels uncomfortable is that something's at stake there, you know? And I think I'm so innately curious that I'm like, let's unpack that. Why does that make you feel uncomfortable? Let's have a chat. And I think, you know, especially coming from where I come from in Northern Ireland, all of that to anyone listening from home is going to be like, oh my God, what a wanker. Like, you're such an actor. What the hell are you talking about? And they'll think it's very flowery language. And I definitely thought that before I went to drama school. I didn't really talk about my feelings or kind of address them in a healthy way. We suppress, we have a cup of tea or we have a drink and we have a pat on the back and it's all grand and you move on and don't talk about it. You just get on with things. But I think the simplest thing is just to have a chat. We don't have to use all that kind of flowery language. We can just talk about it. And I think that's something that's so important. I would love to kind of talk about more at home, because I think just having these chats is so important and taking away the stigma of being vulnerable and talking about your emotions. And it doesn't have to be in a wanky way. We don't have to talk. We don't have to unpack all the feelings and sit down on a sofa and be really deep. You can just talk. It's scary, but I think it's important to do.
So it's just a case of Googling, we're not really strangers, and you buy the card game.
Mm-hmm. I think she set it up as like a, I don't know, I can't remember a lot. I can't remember it all, but she set it up and then turned it into a business. And I just think it's wonderful. It's a really cool card game. And it does ship from America, so you have to pay for shipping, but it's definitely worth playing.
You could not be more singing to the choir on this one.
Oh, it's wonderful. You should definitely get it. And they have so many different expansion packs as well. I bought... Now I'm going to sound like a real cheesy actor. They have a self-reflection one.
Oh, yes, please.
Self-reflection pack. Yeah, it's great. And I bought the little book and the deck of cards, and you just pick one at random and it really makes you think. The last one I picked up was, what was it? It was something like, what do you keep doing that hurts you and why do you keep doing this? And you take the card, you just sit and you think about it and you think, no, like I do healthy. Oh no, there's that one thing I do. And I wonder why I do it. And it really makes you look inwards. I think we spend so much time trying to connect outwards with other people that we forget that we need to know ourselves as well. And I love this. I love, you know, when you're on a plane and they do the little safety demonstration and they say, if the air supply fails, a mask thing will fall. And you have to put your own mask on before helping other people.
Yeah.
I remember being a kid and thinking, why is my mommy not helping me first? The world revolves around me. Help me. But it makes sense because, I mean, if you go to help someone else, you're going to run out of oxygen before you can actually help them in any beneficial way. And that always kind of stuck with me. I always think you have to put your own mask on first before helping other people, because if you give 100% to them, you're just going to burn out and you're going to have nothing left to give. So you have to look after yourself, not be selfish, but selfish in a way. I think selfish is sometimes a very negative word, but it's no bad thing. You have to look after yourself. Otherwise you can't give to other people. So I think that kind of self-reflection kit is a really good way to do that. And you can be as kind of wanky as you want, because it's just you hearing the answers or just you writing them out. And I think this kind of lockdown situation has given a lot of time for people to just be by themselves. And it can be really difficult and it can be terrifying, but it can also be eye-opening, and you can find so much about yourself that you never really had the time to look at before. And I love that kind of idea that we're constantly growing. I mean, I don't think I'll ever have all the answers, but I think it's a journey that we go on and we have to keep going on. And you think, I remember thinking like at 18, yep, got it all figured out. I know exactly how the world works.
That's the truth.
And then I went to uni and I thought, oh shit, I have no idea what happens out here. And then at 20, I thought, yep, no, I've got it now. I've learned so much since 18, not going to do that again. 21, oh, no, now I've got it. And it just, it's continuously changing. And you always think, yep, this is it. I've figured it all out. But I don't think we ever will. And I think when you think you have, that's probably a good time to go, oh, hang on, maybe I should check in with myself and see where we're really at. And just yeah, stay curious, really.
You're absolutely right. And you know, as long as you can remain curious throughout life, I mean, that it just keeps everything so interesting as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Why would you settle? It gets boring. And if we were all the same, bloody hell, it'd be excruciating.
Absolutely. Now, I know you've been stupid. I look at the clock. You've been stupid. It's sign of a great chat is when it's about half an hour after you thought it was. So thank you very much for being so.
Oh my god.
No. I can't thank you enough. There's so many things that I've got my list of things I want to talk about. So many things we've not touched on, but that, you know, that's absolutely grand. May I ask though, you've got into trees on lockdown. Is this right?
Yes. So you're going to regret talking about this.
No, not at all. No.
So this whole thing about growth, this came, well, I'm always a big believer in that anyway, but I started reading about trees recently because I spend a lot of time on a job I was just on. We were out in the forest a lot and I kept looking up and around us. A lot of my scenes were by myself and obviously the crew have to stay distanced. So I would just stand and look up at the treetops and it's so relaxing and so good for, there is some science about being around trees that is good for your mental health.
Yeah.
I'm not smart enough to tell you what that is, but I'm sure Google will. And so I got really fascinated by them and I started looking up these things and then bought this book and it said that trees can actually communicate with each other. Not like, hey, how you doing? But they can smell and they can taste and they can send electrical like impulses through the air to the other trees. So if a tree is being eaten by a giraffe, that's obviously not great for their leaves. So they will send a chemical into the air that is received by the trees around them and they go, oh shit, Johnny's being eaten by a giraffe. Maybe I should create this chemical and send it to my own leaves. So when the giraffe comes to me and tries to eat my leaves, it doesn't like it and it sends it away. And if a leaf is being eaten by like a little insect or something, the tree will be able to taste what that insect is and then send a chemical into the air that attracts the predator for that insect. So it gets rid of it. And I just think that's fascinating and so intelligent. And they can live for like thousands of years. One of the oldest trees was 9,500 years old. And they're just continuously growing for that entire time. And they help each other. There's so many trees in the forest because they help each other and they create this microclimate that enables them to grow. And if a tree is felled in a forest, it can be felled for hundreds of years. But if the trees around it see potential in that stump, they will start to give their own nutrients and sugars to that stump to help it grow again. So they help each other and they communicate. And a tree out by itself is never going to last as long as a tree in a forest surrounded by the things that support it. And I think it's just so reflective of life. And, you know, I think a lot of people do feel a little bit isolated and do feel a little bit lonely. I've certainly felt lonely at times, especially being away from home at work.
Sure.
But, you know, if we can just talk to each other and help each other rather than shit on each other, then I don't think that's any bad thing. And I think we can take a lot, sounds ridiculous, but I think we can learn a lot from how trees grow, and they are patient and they are strong and they are resilient and they move with like the changing winds and everything around them, and they just continuously grow and they never take more than they need. So they will take the sun and they will take everything, and as they grow some of their branches will fall off and give back to the forest floor. So they're just, I just think they're wonderful. I think we should all be a little more tree.
There was an episode of Grayson's Art Club recently and Harry Hill had printed off a picture of his portrait of his mum. Did you see this?
No.
His mum's passed away, and he printed off a picture of his mum, cut the face out, went to find a tree near where he lives, put his mum's face on a tree, and I'm going to cry at the memory. Hugged the tree as if it was his own mother. Off the back of that, we have a big tree in our back garden. So my wife looking on, thinking, "What have I married?" But I was hugging the tree, and there is something. I'm not saying anything new here, but there is something profound about trees.
Absolutely, I think I take a lot of comfort in them. They're just, it's almost like a support blanket. Like, that tree is going to be there far longer than I am. It's been there far longer than I have been, and I think there's just something very calming and lovely about just standing in the middle of a forest, not even a forest, like a park, just being near trees and just breathing with it and just experiencing it. It just brings a real level of calm. And I don't know what the science behind that is, but I think I've spoken to a lot of people and they say, oh yeah, I do actually find once you go outside into nature and you just spend a little time there, not looking at your phone, any of that kind of modern stuff, just being in nature is so good for you.
We did it with, I've written a piece about this. There's been some relatively new research in the past 12 months, something like 20 minutes a day in nature, something like that, the impact it has on your mental health.
Mm.
And that basically we all need to do it, especially on lockdown.
Yeah, we spend so much time staring at screens now.
Oh, God, I'm terrible.
Yeah, but it's kind of, we're forced to because it's the only way to connect, which is great. But I think we do miss that kind of physical thing, and having a tree physically there that you can reach out, even just like touching it, is really lovely.
Now, before you go, again, thank you so much. But may I ask?
Thank you.
The question I always forget to ask, and it's what do you do for balance? So is there anything else you do for balance? And especially with you right now, you know, you've got the world by the tail. You know, everything's going so wonderfully well. So I guess there's never been a better time to find that balance.
Mm. I think ab workouts. No, I'm joking. Balance. But I think it's just, I think it is a lot of self-reflection, as silly as that. Well, not silly, as kind of cheesy and wanky, I suppose, as that sounds. But you can have these really high highs, but with that come low lows as well. And it's a constant flux.
Yeah, I think
everyone has mental health, and it's a constant journey, and it's never going to be perfect. But I think just move with that and be patient and kind and gentle with yourself. The way that we talk to ourselves is so different to how we talk to friends or people that we love and really care about. But why? You should use that energy that you give to other people to yourself as well, because I think it will just help everything. And I think not taking yourself too seriously, you know, is also a massive thing. And I think, coming from where I come from, it's kind of ingrained in us to, if you ever start to be a dick, someone will shit on you and bring you right back down. Like, I think with all this kind of what people call success, a lot of it can be quite not performative, but from the outside looking in, everything looks perfect. But that's so rarely the case. I mean, you could look at, some people look at my career and go, oh, but you have to be happy. Like, you have incredible things that you've done. But then I look at them and I'm like, yeah, but you know, you have a beautiful family. You have kids. I'm desperate to have kids when I grow up. I cannot wait to have children. And to me, that's the perfect life. But to them, the perfect life is having all these jobs and things like that. And I think it's all relative, and just be grateful for what you have, and just stay curious and kind, really, because kindness costs nothing at the end of the day. Kindness to yourself and to the world.
Absolutely. I can't thank you enough. It's been such a privilege to chat with you, and you have no idea, and the listener must never ever know, even though I'm admitting it now, how many times you had me on the cusp of from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much. And
thank you. This has been really lovely. Thank you so much.
Bless you. And the best of luck with the irregulars. Also, you know, this feels like this is a show that can run, isn't it?
Hopefully. I really hope so. It's, I think the world that Tom has created, like, he spent 10 years on it, and it's so nuanced. There are so many parts of it to explore. And I think this is just the beginning, hopefully. I mean, I say that like our story hasn't had an arc and resolved itself. It has in many ways. You're not going to be left thinking, oh, bloody hell, they didn't tell me who the hell killed that person. But I do think there's more to explore, and I really hope that we get to do it, because it's just a dream. I can't tell you how much it means to me. And I think more so, the more that we talk about it, the more I think, oh God, yeah, I really do love that little thing, don't I? Well, that's not a bad show.
I'll say one thing that might make you love it even more. A friend of mine writes, he writes for TV, and he said to me, such a big thing is creating a world, I know you already know this, so I apologise, but to the listener who might not know this, creating a world that the listener, that the viewer wants to be a part of, to the extent where they actually feel like they are in that world. So one extreme example is Cheers. So when you watch the sitcom Cheers, you want to be in that bar with them, to the point where you actually feel like you are in there with them. And with the irregulars, I absolutely felt like I was in Victorian London and part of the irregulars. And I say that as such a huge compliment to the show. You feel like you are immersed in that world, don't you?
Absolutely. I think I keep talking about Tom Bidwell, but he is honestly one of the most brilliant people I've ever met. And he's so humble and so grounded. And I just admire and respect him innately. Innately, is that the word?
Yeah.
Immensely. Innately. And I think that's just a credit to him, that he has kind of created these people that you do fall in love with and you do really feel for. And I think they're just so honest and they feel like people you know. Although it's set in Victorian London, you're like, oh, I have a friend like that. Oh, yeah, I've got a friend like that as well. And you just have this instant attachment. And I think you're right. Like, it's just, you don't get that often. And my one, I think, would be Gilmore Girls. I watched that show and I went, oh, I wish I could, you know, go and talk to Rory or Lorelai and go round to the Friday night dinners. And that's a world that I want to step into. And I want those people in my life. And I do have those people in my life. They're just not called Lorelai. And I think if we've created a world like that, then that's, oh God, that's just wonderful. It's a lovely compliment.
Oh, you absolutely have. Well, look, thank you again. And hopefully, you know, if I meet you in person, I'll shake you by the hand and thank you.
I will run the other way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
with your very, very tiny baseball bat.
I'm off to practice in the garden with my tiny baseball bat.
Yeah.
But no, sincerely, thank you very much.
No, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Take care. All the very best.
Have a good one.
You too. Thank you.
Huge and heartfelt thanks to Thaddea and for the people who made that happen. I'm sure you will agree that was a very special episode, and she was incredibly just generous with her time and with her spirit. You know, it was really a really candid chat. So next week, next Monday, I sort of don't want to spoil it, but we are speaking to an icon, and I will leave it at that. I watched a documentary about this particular icon. He's so random. Sat watching a documentary about this icon, and then I think it was 2 days later, I received an email from Fresh Air: would you like to interview this icon? I couldn't reply quick enough. Yes. So, you know, coincidence, sure. Regular listeners would say maybe it was manifested, who knows. But a most peculiar turn of events to watch a documentary about someone and then, apropos of nothing, receive an email asking if I would like to interview this particular person. This documentary is a couple of years old as well. It's not like it was a new... Anyway, I digress. That's next Monday. I'll say no more. If you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends, spread the word. We are at Balance LDN across the socials. I'm at James Gill Comedy. Thank you as always. Take care and speak soon. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports-ad-free. That's amazon.com/sports-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.